Hi, and welcome to Crash Course Catholicism, a podcast about Catholic teaching and why it makes sense. I'm your host, Caitlin West. Hey friends, how you doing? I feel like it's been ages. I know that this episode is only a week late, but it feels like it's been a million years. So hey, how you doing? Hope you've been well. I was in Japan last week, so that's why this episode is out a little bit late. And I've just come back, so you'll have to excuse me if I'm like slightly incoherent today, because I am still recovering from what ended up being a very long flight home. So today, we are continuing our discussion of the Ten Commandments by looking at the fourth commandment, which is honor your father and mother. Okay, now let's just pause for a second and think about why this is the fourth commandment. Honor your mother and father. So you know how we said that these next seven commandments teach us how to love others, how to love our neighbor. Why is it that we start with our parents? Why don't we start with, you know, the poor or refugees or children? You know, what does this tell us? Well, what it tells us is that this is the first order of business, the first order of charity, right? Honor your mother and father. We cannot extend charity to the poor and to the marginalized if we don't first know how to love those that are closest to us. So point 2197 of the Catechism says that the fourth commandment shows us the order of charity. God has willed that after him, we should honor our parents to whom we owe life. So what does it mean to honor our father and mother? Well, first of all, it means that we should love them, that we should respect them and show gratitude for everything that they've done for us. So as I said, I was just in Japan, and this was something that I really noticed while I was there, that there is this real culture of being respectful to your elders and to your mum and dad, and for being grateful for all the things that they've done for you. And I think that this is sometimes something that we need to be reminded of a little bit in the Western world, because we tend more towards individualism. We should never forget to show affection and respect for the people who raised us or are raising us. Now, not everyone is lucky enough to be born into a loving and supportive family. Some people have experienced coldness or neglect or even abuse in their upbringing, and this might make it really hard to feel that respect or gratitude for parents. But even in those situations, everyone is required to have a kind of supernatural charity for their parents, even if, humanly speaking, they don't sort of quote unquote deserve it or they're difficult to love, because this is how God loves us, right? So point 2215 says that respect for parents derives from gratitude towards those who have brought their children into this world and enabled them to grow. So this commandment doesn't require us to think that our parents are perfect people or even to be super close to them. I mean, ideally, of course, we would be. And for most of us, I think it's just kind of wired into us. But regardless of our family situation or our experiences growing up, every person is required to love their parents on that kind of supernatural level. So that means that we need to pray for our mum and dad. We need to wish the best for them and show gratitude just for the mere fact that they brought us into this world. Now, the Catechism says in point 2217 that as long as a child lives at home with his parents, the child should obey his parents in all that they ask of him when it is for his good or that of the family. So, children are required to be obedient to their parents, but the Catechism makes this really important qualification here by reminding us that children aren't required to just blindly do whatever their parents say. It says, if a child is convinced in conscience that it would be morally wrong to obey a particular order, he must not do so. So obedience is important, but always within the bounds of morality. So it makes me think of something like, you know, Fagin in Oliver Twist. Like sometimes, unfortunately, parents or guardians might tell their child to do something wrong. And in that instance, the child is not under an obligation to obey. However, in all other instances, when it comes to things that are for the good of the family, the child should always be obedient. And instances like this come up all the time. Like I remember when I was a kid and, you know, mum might say, oh, can you please tidy up the living room? And I was just on my way to like my bedroom to call a friend or to do something of my own. And you have that moment of like, oh, I just want to do my own thing. In those moments, we are always required to listen to our mum and dad and do the thing that is for the good of the whole family. Or sometimes like your mum and dad might ask you to do something that's not morally right or wrong, or maybe it's morally neutral, but it's like kind of annoying. Like, you know, when your parents get a little bit paranoid about you getting cold and they keep telling you to bring a jumper and you're looking outside and you're like, the weather is fine, I'm not cold, I don't need to bring a jumper. Okay, in those instances, it's always good for us to listen to our mum and dad and be like, yep, sure, I'll pack a jumper, even though I don't think I need it. Now, why is it important for us to do this? Because this isn't just some sort of, you know, arbitrary power play, right? Like your mum and dad are bigger than you and stronger than you and they're in charge, so you just have to do what they say. No, the reason why we should be obedient to our mum and dad when we're living with them is twofold. First of all, the family, as we've talked about in previous episodes, is the kind of first community that we ever experience, okay? The family is the place where we learn to be part of a team. And a really important skill to have as a functioning member of society is knowing how to make compromises, to listen to others, to put aside what I want in favor of what other people want. I mean, not all the time. We have to have healthy boundaries and there are times when we have to say, no, this is what I need. But at the same time, knowing how to be flexible. Like if you've ever been in that situation where you're with other people and there's that one person who can't cope with not getting their own way, right? It makes them really difficult to be around. So being in a family is a really safe, usually a really safe space to learn that skill, to learn how to say, look, I would rather do something else right now, but in this situation, you know, it's not a moral decision. There's no moral right or wrong. And I'm going to freely make the decision to listen to the person in authority or to do the thing that I would rather not do for the sake of, you know, the common good. So that's one kind of practical reason why it's really good to learn how to say yes when our mum or dad asks us to do something. But as well as that, God has given our parents the responsibility and also the grace to be parents, right? To raise us, to look after us. So you might remember in a previous episode, we talked about how there are specific graces that God gives us according to our state of life. So if you're a priest, God will give you the grace to be a good priest. If you're, you know, a single person, God will give you the grace to be a good single person. And the same goes for parents, right? When you become a mother or a father, God gives you the grace to be a mother or a father. And this is kind of like a side note, but I've had this conversation with friends before where they'll be like, you know, I don't think I could ever be a parent because I think I would be a terrible parent. I'd be an awful mother or an awful father. And whenever I hear that, I'm like, well, yeah, of course you feel like that now because you're not a parent. God hasn't given you the grace to be a good parent because you're not a parent. This is something that Jacques Philippe talks about, that God gives us the grace to deal with the things that are happening right now, not the things that are going to happen in the future. Anyway, that's a side note, but back to our main point. God has given those graces to our mum and dad. And so when we obey our mum and dad, we're showing respect for that role that they have and for the grace that God has given them to look after us and to raise us. Now, again, this doesn't mean blindly doing whatever they say. You know, children have every right to engage in discussions with their parents about the things that they've asked them to do, to ask questions, to kind of nut things out. But ultimately, respect for and obedience to our parents is a really important part of family life. Having said that, once we've actually grown up and we've moved out of home, we are no longer required to be obedient to our parents. So the Catechism says that obedience towards parents ceases with the emancipation of the children, but not so respect. So basically what that means is once I'm an adult, I'm no longer under any obligation to do what my mum and dad say because their job is kind of done at that point. They've raised me and I'm an adult now, but that doesn't mean that I no longer have any obligations towards them. Point 2218 says that as much as they can, children should give their parents material and moral support in old age and in times of illness, loneliness, or distress. So honoring my parents as an adult means respecting them, listening to them, looking after them, and being there for them in whatever way I can. And I think, again, this is something that is imbued more into some cultures than others. And it's good to be reminded of the fact that, you know, even though my mum and dad aren't the boss anymore, I can still call them and see how they're going, or stay in touch with them, or show them love and affection, or send them a little card or a text, or, you know, show that those signs of respect and affection and gratitude even as an adult. Now, the Catechism points out that the relationship between parents and their children isn't just a one-way relationship, right? That parents also have certain duties and responsibilities towards their children as well. So point 2201 of the Catechism says that the begetting of children creates among members of the same family personal relationships and primordial responsibilities. So we all have responsibilities towards each other. So while children are required to be obedient and respectful to their parents, parents also have the responsibility to show love and kindness and respect to their children and to try to raise them as well as possible. And this is something that's really important to remember in a world where children are often treated, especially, you know, in the media, as almost like they are commodities, like their role is to kind of fulfill their parents. But actually, parents also have serious responsibilities when it comes to raising children. So what are those responsibilities? Well, the Catechism in point 2222, such a satisfying number, 2222, says that parents must regard their children as children of God and respect them as human persons. So parents don't just have a blank check to sort of act like tyrants or to lord it over their kids. Actually, it makes me think of The Sound of Music. Oh gosh, I love that film so very much. And it's sort of a journey that you see occurring in the film that the dad has to learn that, like, his kids aren't just there to be obedient and to, like, do all of the right things. He also owes them love and affection, right? He's there to be their father, not just their kind of authority figure. Or another example we could think of is like the book Matilda by Roald Dahl. That's a really good example of bad parenting, right? Where the mum and dad are like, well, we're in charge and we are the bosses of this family and your job is just to do everything that I say. I mean, of course, parents do have a kind of authority over their children, but it's an authority that is infused with charity, with love, with respect for the kids, right? So the Catechism in point 2203 says that family members are persons equal in dignity. And that doesn't mean equal in authority. Like, you know, there are some people who are like, oh, we're raising our children as though we're all adults and we're letting them, you know, make their own decisions about their life and discipline and everything. No, like a mum and dad, you're there to raise the kids and you do have that authority. But at the same time, there's that equality of dignity in the family, that every person is a human person that deserves love and respect. Now, one of the main responsibilities of parents is to raise and educate and form their children. So point 2221 in the Catechism says, the fecundity of conjugal love cannot be reduced solely to the procreation of children, but must extend to their moral education and their spiritual formation. So in other words, parents have the responsibility to educate their children, to try to teach them virtue and to lay that sort of foundation for them so that they can then flourish as adults. And this is something that can sometimes get a bit lost in families, especially today where so many things are outsourced. We might have this attitude that, you know, my job as a parent is to look after the physical welfare of my kids, but then their human or moral formation and their education is something that they get somewhere else, maybe at school or from a nanny or a babysitter or their grandma or whatever. And of course, there's nothing wrong with schools and nannies and grandmas being part of that process. But ultimately, that responsibility of education and formation rests with the parents. So, parents educate their children in two key ways. Firstly, the Catechism in point 2228 says that respect and devotion lead parents to educate children in the right use of their reason and freedom. So this means helping kids to use their brains. Okay, it means more than just teaching your children to be obedient. It means forming their consciences so that they can then make free moral decisions as adults. So I know my parents did a really great job of this when we were kids. Whenever there was a rule that they made that we didn't get or that we didn't really want to follow or we were asking questions about it, they would always sit us down and actually talk through their reasoning. They would explain, okay, this is why we made that rule. This is our reasoning behind it. And they would let us ask questions and argue about it and explain our frustrations. And it was such a good tactic because honestly, 99.9% of the time, we actually came round and in the end, we were happy to obey them because we felt like we understood their reasoning and we felt like we had participated in that process. We were part of a team, right? Even though mum and dad were ultimately in charge, we weren't just like mindless subordinates being told to obey. So there's this book by Jane Austen called Mansfield Park. And there's this really interesting bit in the book where there are these two daughters who the dad has raised them to be really, really kind of obedient. And they have all of the outward appearances of being good people, right? They're always doing the right thing. They're following all of the rules, but they've never really kind of internally understood why they're doing those things. And so, of course, as soon as the parental authority is absent, as soon as the dad is away from home, they start to misbehave. And in the end, one of the daughters does something wrong. Really bad and kind of goes off the rails. And there's this interesting point where the dad is reflecting on the way that he's raised his daughters. And he says something along the lines of, I always wanted my children to be good, but I succeeded only in making them good-mannered. And I love that quote. I've often returned to it, that it's so easy to just focus on the outward appearances, right? Of just being obedient and doing what our parents say and doing the right thing. But if we truly don't want kids to rebel, if we want them to be good people, even when they've left, like sort of fled the nest, then it requires teaching them how to use their reason and their freedom to do the right thing. And this leads us to the other aspect of parental education, which is the formation of our characters, right? Teaching us to grow in virtue. So, point 2208 of the Catechism says that the family should live in such a way that its members learn to care and take responsibility for the young, the old, the sick, the handicapped, and the poor. And then point 2223 says that parents bear witness to their responsibility first by creating a home where tenderness, forgiveness, respect, fidelity, and disinterested service are the rule. So in other words, parents are required not just to teach their children to use their brains, but also to use their hearts, to be good people. Now, the first thing that we need to do if we want to pass virtue on to others is, of course, to have it ourselves. Like, we can't give something that we don't have. So the Catechism goes on to say that parents have a grave responsibility to give good example to their children. So we can think about something like the life of Pope John Paul II. John Paul II talked about how his, like the best lessons that he learned through watching his father. He watched his father do the right thing. He learned how to pray by waking up in the middle of the night and seeing his dad on his knees in prayer. Now, if you can imagine, if his dad had been getting around saying like, you know, Carol, you need to pray. You need to pray more. You need to pray better. But he never actually saw his dad praying, then it's much less likely that he would have developed that capacity himself. So you know how there's that saying, do as I say, not as I do. I know my mum used to say that all the time when we were kids. And I'm sure that if I ever become a mother, I will say that to my children as well. And it's a funny saying and it kind of captures the fact that, okay, your parents aren't always perfect. But at the same time, the best way to teach children what to do is to do those things ourselves. Having said that, it's important to remember that parents are not required to be perfect. Okay, no one is saying that in order to raise children well, you have to be absolutely perfect yourselves. And in fact, the Catechism goes on to acknowledge this. It says, by knowing how to acknowledge their own failings to their children, parents will be better able to guide and correct them. So yes, parents should strive to have virtue and show virtue to their children, but even when they lack virtue, it can actually be a really powerful tool for forming our children to be open and honest about that with our kids. So it makes me think of the book Little Women. There's this beautiful scene in that book where there's the mother who's called Mommy, or that's the name that the kids use for her, Mommy, and the daughter Jo. And Jo has a really bad temper, and she has just absolutely lost it with one of her sisters, and she's feeling really bad about it. So she goes to her mum, and her mum, in the course of this conversation with Jo, tells her, you know, I actually have a really bad temper myself. It's something that I really struggle with. And Jo is like, oh, come on, as if, you never get angry. I've never seen you angry. And the mom is like, well, yeah, maybe you don't see it outwardly, but that's because I've worked on it so hard my whole life. And even if I don't show it on the outside, often I'm really angry on the inside. And sometimes I have to leave the room, or I have to, you know, do something to kind of control my anger. And it's this moment of such revelation for Jo. She has so much more respect for her mother. And it also shows her, she's like, okay, if my mum can do this, then maybe I can do it too. You know, if it's hard for her and she's so wonderful and I respect her so much, then maybe I can conquer this vice as well. So that can be a really powerful way to encourage children to struggle with virtue by letting them see our own struggles with virtue. Another responsibility that parents have is to raise their children in the faith. So point 2225 says that parents should initiate their children at an early age into the mysteries of the faith. So Christian parents have a responsibility to raise their children as Christians. I don't know if you've ever had one of those conversations with someone where they've said, oh, you know, we didn't feel comfortable sort of indoctrinating our children at such a young age. We wanted to leave them free to make their own decision about their faith when they were older, so we didn't teach them anything as kids. And that's some kind of faulty logic for two reasons. First of all, there is no such thing as raising your child without any kind of belief system. If you're not raising your child to be a Christian, then you're raising them to be an agnostic or an atheist. Not making a decision is making a decision about your child's faith. Secondly, if you are genuinely convinced of the truth of something, then you will naturally want to pass that truth onto your kids. And as parents, you actually have a responsibility to pass that truth onto your kids. So we can think about things other than faith, right? Think about something like health and healthy eating and nutrition. Imagine if there was a parent who said, oh, well, we never really taught our kids about nutrition. We never gave them vegetables or encouraged them to exercise because we didn't want to force our own beliefs down their throats. We wanted them to make their own decisions about what was healthy or unhealthy. So we just kind of left it blank. We didn't teach them anything. You would rightly conclude that those were some pretty neglectful parents, because it is your job as a parent to pass on the things that you believe are true to your kids. Also, if we think about like the kind of world that we live in now, I mean, at least this is true in Australia, that, you know, when we look at the media and social media and, you know, the kind of pressures that kids experience in social life or the things that they learn at school, the world will generally kind of guide children in a certain direction. So the job of parents is to kind of arm their kids with the capacity to, you know, make decisions about whether those things were right or wrong, or, you know, how to push back against the pressures that they experience when they're growing up. So that's a big responsibility that parents have. Now, even though parents have a responsibility to raise and to educate their children, they also need to respect their children's freedom, particularly when they become adults. So point 2229 of the Catechism says that when they become adults, children have the right and duty to choose their profession and state of life. So state of life refers to, you know, whether they're called to be a priest or a nun or celibate or to get married. Parents should be careful not to exert pressure on their children, either in the choice of a profession or in that of a spouse. So again, here we return to the fact that the job of a parent is to kind of lay the foundation for their children so that they can then go on to make free decisions rather than sort of controlling every aspect of their life. Now, having said that, the Catechism goes on to say that, of course, parents have the right and even the responsibility to offer advice to their kids. It's not like a complete hands-off once they're adults, but ultimately they need to respect their children's freedom. So if you're looking for some extra kind of inspiration on the kinds of dynamics that should exist between parents and their children in families, what it means to honor your father and mother, what it means to treat your children with respect and equality and dignity, I would recommend reading a couple of things. One is a book called Our Lives in His Hands, and it's a book about a couple called Tomas and Paquita Alvira. So Tomas and Paquita were a married couple who lived in Spain in the 1900s. They had 9 kids, legends, and they were recently made servants of God by the church. And what that means is that they are on the path to being beatified and hopefully eventually canonized by the Catholic Church. So in that book, we see so many great examples of that kind of healthy dynamic between parents and their children. I would also recommend reading up on the lives of Saint Louis and Zélie Martin, who were the parents of Thérèse of Lisieux. And I apologize to any French person who just heard me butcher those names. They've both recently been canonized by the Catholic Church. They're both saints. And they were obviously incredible parents, not just because they were saints themselves, but because they raised one of the greatest saints of all time. Now, earlier, we said that the family is the first community that we ever encounter, and that those relationships between parents and children and also siblings set the foundation for the way a person will end up functioning as part of society. For this reason, the Catechism talks about how governments have a really important responsibility to support and care for and protect families. So, this means making sure that families are able to stay together wherever possible, that, you know, the government shouldn't intervene in family life when it's not necessary, that parents should be permitted and even encouraged to educate and form their own children, to make their own decisions about how they want to raise their kids, the kind of school that they want to send their kids to, the values and religious convictions that they want to pass on. And this brings us back to that principle of subsidiarity, which we discussed in episodes 30 and 31. Wherever families can look after themselves, they should be permitted and even supported to do so. So the Catechism talks about how governments should support families by providing medical care, assistance for the aged, and family benefits. They should protect security and health, especially with respect to dangers like drugs, pornography, alcoholism, etc. So they have the responsibility to kind of provide the scaffolding that will help families to flourish. Now, again, let's return to this idea that the family is that first cell of social life. If it is true that children should honour and respect their parents, and that parents in return have a responsibility to look after their children, this same logic applies on a kind of macro level to all relationships of leadership and kinship in society. So point 2199 of the Catechism says that this fourth commandment concerns also the ties of kinship between members of the extended family. It requires honor, affection, and gratitude towards elders and ancestors. And it extends to the duties of pupils to teachers, employees to employers, subordinates to leaders, citizens to their country, and to those who administer or govern it. Basically, what it's saying is that, you know, this is the dynamic that should exist in all situations where someone is in a position of authority. And of course, here we're talking about positions of legitimate authority, and we're not talking about like corrupt despots. We're not under any kind of obligation to obey a tyrant. But basically, that relational dynamic is one that kind of maps onto all areas of a social life. So for instance, as citizens of a country, we are required to serve the common good and to act in accordance with the laws of our country, provided, obviously, that they sort of fall within the bounds of morality. So very similar to what we were talking about in terms of children in relation to their parents. So point 2239 of the Catechism says that it is the duty of citizens to contribute to the good of society. Submission to legitimate authorities and service of the common good make it morally obligatory to pay taxes, to exercise the right to vote, and to defend one's country. And this is something that we learn in the family, right? That no man is an island. My job is not just to look after myself, but also to care for others as well, and to listen to the legitimate authorities in, you know, whatever situation I'm in. And then on the flip side, leaders also have an obligation to lead us well. So that means, just as we discussed with parents, leading by example encouraging our use of freedom and responsibility, and making laws that respect human dignity and promote positive moral choices. Point 2237 of the Catechism says that political authorities dispense justice humanely by respecting the rights of everyone, especially of families and the disadvantaged. So we talked about human rights in episode 31, and governments have the responsibility to encourage and protect those human rights. Point 2235 of the Catechism says that those who exercise authority should do so as a service. No one can command or establish what is contrary to the dignity of persons and the natural law. So just like with parents, being in a position of power or authority doesn't mean that I have a blank check to kind of lord it over people. It actually means that I have a responsibility to serve, to care for and guide the people that I have authority over. So what we can see here is that the fourth commandment, this is why it's first in that kind of second, not half, but the second part of the commandments. The fourth commandment provides us with this blueprint for the functioning of all human relationships. If when charity is at the heart of our relationships, if I know how to love and honor my parents, and if my parents respect and educate me well, this will act as a kind of scaffolding that will serve us in all of our human relationships. Okay, so that's all that we have time for today. Next fortnight, we're going to talk about the fifth commandment. Yay! I hope you have a fantastic fortnight, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye!